there is no convincing evidence, whether that's through the court of public opinion or whether that's through the court system.
Impeachment number two in the twilight of a tumultuous presidency. This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Welcome in for our usual Friday review of politics. Here for the discussion about the vaccination rollout, achieving unity, maybe, and the big vote on Capitol Hill, are Rob Schofield with the Progressive NC Policy Watch and Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Hey, guys.
Good to be back.
This conversation was recorded Friday morning. President Donald Trump was impeached again, this time for his role in the act of domestic terrorism that took place on Capitol Hill two Wednesdays ago. 10 Republicans in the U.S. House joined Democrats in voting for the impeachment. We know that a trial in the Senate will not take place until after inauguration. We don't know precisely how that trial will go. Becky, if you were in the U.S. Senate, would you vote to convict?
I'd have to see all of the, you know, the whole case laid out and all the evidence and the arguments and all of those kind of things. I tell you what, if I was in the Senate, though, I would be encouraging my colleagues and I would be encouraging the president to move forward. You know, President Biden has a choice of either he can spend his first 100 days still talking about Donald Trump, or he can begin to implement what his policies are. And if I were sitting in the Senate, that would be, I would encourage President Biden and my colleagues to move forward with addressing many of the serious problems that face our country and our nation.
One of the serious problems that faces our nation is domestic terrorism, and the fact that we have had a president who has participated in that and indeed urged it on. You know, the impeachment of Trump and the possible conviction of Trump in an impeachment trial isn't so much about, you know, the present. It's about the future. It's about establishing a precedent that no future president would ever dare to go in the direction that Trump has gone. So it's quite possible for the Senate to walk and chew gum at the same time. It can confirm President-elect Biden's nominees. It can move forward with his ambitious agenda, and it can also hold a trial for Donald Trump. There's every capacity and capability of doing that, and I would just hope that they'd proceed with that and that all the members, like Becky said, would listen to the evidence and vote their conscience rather than politics.
You know, Rob raises some interesting points, and one is the threat of domestic violence, and I think we've all seen that. I think that we all want an end to that, and in my view, if you continue this, the Trump-centered discussion, and I think it further divides the country, and I think it keeps those wounds open and, you know, very raw. And so, again, in my view, I think that moving forward with the Biden administration and moving, President Trump will no longer be the president. He has been impeached. I think, you know, the public opinion has certainly going to have an influence on his legacy. And I think that it's just time to move on. And again, that would be my advice to President-elect Biden, soon to be President Biden, and if my colleagues in the Senate.
So I asked you about the question going forward. Let me pause and back up and ask you, if you had a vote before you on impeachment in recent days, would you have voted, Becky, to impeach the president?
You know, I probably would have. Now, you know, I'm not an elected official. I'm not a member of Congress. So who cares, you know, really? I was appalled by what happened last week. I was appalled at where we have arrived as a country. Listening to the evidence that was presented, and again, it was a very short impeachment trial. I probably want more information, but based on what was presented, I would have voted yes on impeachment.
Rob, do you want to jump in?
Well, I just want to say that that's important that Becky says that, and it's important that conservative voices have an opportunity to present a unified position. She worries about, you know, this is going to spur on more divisions in the country, but if conservatives come together in the United States Senate, in the United States House, and stand up and do the right thing, and if we had, for instance, a unanimous vote in the United States Senate to convict President Trump, that sends an enormously powerful message, both for the present and going forward. That's the kind of unanimity, kind of unity that we need. We need to all come together to speak out vociferously against this kind of horrific insurrection and this incitement to overthrow the government. My gosh, what more could, what if that's not an impeachable offense, what is?
Well, I agree with Rob to an extent, but, you know, I will point out, too, that I believe that each elected member of Congress, any elected official, needs to consult with their constituents. They need to dig deep within their heart and mind, and they need to vote in the way that they believe is best and reflects their beliefs and the beliefs of their constituents and the people that they represent. I think to just say, well, everybody ought to come together and, you know, all the ducks get in a row and do that, I just disagree with that kind of premise. I think that each member is elected to, again, take their constituents' concerns to whatever the body that is. And that applies to, you know, I would apply that to Congress. I would apply it to the North Carolina General Assembly. I would apply it to Council of State, you know, you name it, any elected official. So I think this notion of, you know, everybody ought to get on some kind of boat or train just for the sake of being on a boat or getting everybody on the boat or the train, I think Rob and I just have a little bit of a disagreement on how that would work.
So I only will note from the historical context that for the first time in 209 years, the U.S. Capitol was stormed. So I do think there's something different in this moment than some of the other unrest and some of the other divisions we've seen. If there is a time for unity, it perhaps, hopefully, maybe is now. But I want to build on something Rob just said. He used unify, unanimity. He used some other version of that word. So let's talk unity. I've heard this word a lot in recent days. I've seen it on social media. I've heard it from elected officials. I feel like I've heard it more from the right than from the left, but I've certainly heard it from people on both sides. And I'm wondering if unity and unification and unanimity and some of these different roots that we're talking about, doesn't this have to, on some level, begin simply with saying, Donald Trump was defeated by Joe Biden. There is no evidence, significant or widespread, of election fraud. Don't we have to kind of acknowledge that reality before we move forward? Becky, you want to start with that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I believe that Joe Biden was duly elected by the people of this country. There were questions. There were allegations. I think that those have been examined. What we've seen since the election and since the results of the election were announced is, you know, continued allegations, continued kind of unrest, but we've never seen the hard evidence that would prove otherwise. And at some point, you just have to say, okay, there is no convincing evidence, whether that's through the court of public opinion or whether that's through the court system. And we have seen this verified through those different avenues. And so, yeah, I agree with you. Now, there are people who disagree with that. And I think that we have to have respect for other people's opinions and where they stand on things, too. You know, so to insist that if for some reason you aren't unified or you don't agree with that and demonize other people because they have a different perspective or a different take on things, I don't think that's healthy. And I don't think that it contributes to a real unification and people coming together if there's constantly accusations of, you know, either you're stupid or you're morally bankrupt because you don't agree. Everybody has different perspectives on things. And I think at some point, you know, as far as unity in the country, I think there has to be a respect that other people have differing opinions on things.
Well, the time for that to happen, the time for us to acknowledge that Biden won the election was months ago. The actions of Republican leaders in the Congress at the local level using this inflammatory stop the steal language, standing by Trump as he made these outrageous, false, proven false allegations, that's not just a matter of a differing opinion. That's a matter of irresponsible incitement. I mean, we can disagree on whether the earth is round or flat, but the earth is round and Biden won the election. And that was clear months ago. And that's why this is such an outrageous and one of a kind incident in our American history, because we've had political leaders, starting with the president, but right down the line, and interest groups on the right denying the truth, denying the fact that the election was won by Biden. And if they had not done that, this incitement, this invasion of the Capitol, none of that would have happened. If these politicians, if Trump, starting with Trump, but with all the way down through the Republican leadership, right down to people here in North Carolina, like Speaker Tim Moore, who's up talking about Stop the Steal. If those people had spoken up early and honestly and truthfully, and it's not just a matter of opinion, it's a matter of fact, we wouldn't have had the disaster of January 6th. So we have to keep that in mind. That's we just need to come together on basic facts that in this case, the earth is round.
Well, and, you know, maybe this is now part of our, you know, political system, the way that we look at things. You may recall 4 years ago, there were people on the left who said, you know, Donald Trump is not my president. Now, we didn't have the incitement. We didn't have the storming of the Capitol. I mean, you know, given. But there still was that questioning of, you know, I'm not happy with the election results and I'm not going to accept that the winner is my president. So this isn't the first time that we've kind of seen this pushback from an election. But the fact of the, you know, let's talk about facts. Joe Biden is going to be inaugurated on January 21st. He's going to be the president. And so, you know, some people are going to be very happy about that. Some people are not. But you know what? We've got another election in 4 years. And in the meantime, there are a lot of issues that are facing our country, this pandemic and getting over it. And, you know, let me go on and on and on about all of the problems that need to be addressed in this country. So I think January 21st, a lot of this just becomes somewhat of a moot point in that Joe Biden will be inaugurated as the next president of the United States.
So hopefully January 20th. If it's January
20th, 21st, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I know. We might have another situation on our hands. Let me ask you, I guess, one more follow-up on this, Becky. And I'm wondering to the extent about which you think it's a dangerous equivocation. At what point is it dangerous to open the door on some of these things? I think that we've had a lot of interesting conversations in the last 4 years about charter schools, about tax policy, about environmental regulations. I think there are areas where there are reputable, diverging philosophies or views that make sense. But if somebody says the Holocaust didn't happen, if somebody says the Earth has five moons, we're now dealing in a place of rhetoric and incorrectness that borders on dangerous rhetoric, does it not?
No, absolutely it does. But you know what we have in this country is, you know, the majority rules, and there are outliers in all kinds of public policy issues and ideas that we have. And I think that's a reality. You know, we're always going to, you know, we have nuts and we're always going to have nuts. And, you know, that doesn't mean that the world stops spinning or that our democracy stops in its tracks.
But our democracy can stop if the nut is a president and if the nuts are the people who are leading his party and who are marching in lockstep with him, even after the Capitol's been invaded and they continue to deny that the election was won by Joe Biden, as seven North Carolina members of Congress did. That's a huge problem. That's not just a difference of opinion. That's a dangerous situation in which truth has literally been cast aside and which government is being made based upon lies.
And but
that's,
you know
that's
what,
a
Rob,
huge problem.
Yeah, in a matter of days, Donald Trump will no longer be the president of the United States. And, you know, we can look back on this in history. And I think, you know, we'll be talking about this. Historians will be talking about this for years and years to come.
The FBI has warned of possible armed protests in all 50 state capitals and again in Washington between now and the end of the month. Thousands of National Guard troops have been activated, hundreds within our state. Senate Leader Phil Berger, House Speaker Tim Moore, and Governor Roy Cooper have all condemned the violence. But I'm wondering if you think each of them has done enough to call for peace and calm and make it clear that any effort of an insurrection here will result in the fullest punishment allowed by law. Rob, have they done enough?
Well, you know, I guess the hope here is that in North Carolina, we have not perhaps seen the kind of vigilanteism and overt criminality like they've seen in some states, Arizona, Michigan, where there literally are these criminal terrorists are, in some instances, actually in league with lawmakers. We have had very little indication that that's the case here. So I'm hopeful that they've done enough. I was encouraged to hear some of the rhetoric that came out of the General Assembly with the convening session this week. It was a break. Normally, Senator Berger's taken a very antagonistic attitude toward Governor Cooper, and it seemed to me that he perhaps turned over a leaf there. I'm very hopeful about. So I don't know. I'm not here at this point. I don't feel comfortable criticizing them for not having done enough. I'm hopeful that North Carolina will remain quiet. It may, frankly, be partially a function of the fact that we have a very conservative Republican General Assembly. I wonder if it would be the case if we had a liberal, more liberal Democratic-led General Assembly that was perhaps led by people of color. We know that so much of this vigilantism and terrorism is steeped in racism and white supremacy. So it obviously bears very close watching. I'm hopeful they've done enough.
Well, I'm hopeful as well. I don't know what else the governor and the leaders of the General Assembly could do. I mean, they have unequivocally condemned any kind of breaking of the law, violence. They've been very clear about that. There was criticism. Rob mentioned some criticism of the legislative leaders. There was criticism of Governor Cooper early on with some of the rioting that took place in downtown Raleigh and whether or not he was strong enough during that time. But I think for this particular situation upcoming, the threats that are there, I think they've been very strong in their condemnation. And I really have no criticism of what they've done. Of course, you know, we'll see what happens. And just more from a pragmatic and a practical standpoint, I know that they are putting measures in place at the legislative building. They're calling in, again, the National Guard and law enforcement and limiting the number of people that can be in and around the legislative complex and the government complex. So I think from a practical standpoint, too, they are doing everything that they can do and are on high alert and bringing in whatever measures that warrants. So again, you know, I agree with Rob. I think we're all hopeful that we'll have a very quiet day, quiet week in Raleigh.
North Carolina's distribution of the COVID-19 vaccine is slow. The state currently ranks 37th in the country for efficiency, having administered less than a third of the vaccine doses that the federal government has sent this way. This is an unprecedented vaccination rollout. Health departments are short-staffed, and officials have not been able to plan in advance, really not knowing the quantity of doses coming in until about a week out. The state plans to open several larger vaccination facilities in the days ahead, and the guidelines for who can get vaccinated have again changed. Are you confident in the governor's latest plan? And if not, what would you like to see happening instead? Becky, you can go first.
Lately, I mean, just in the last couple of days, it was really since Mandy Cohen and some of the folks from the DHHS testified before a legislative committee on what the progress of this. North Carolina has only distributed, I think it's about a third of their vaccines. Some of the distribution decisions from the federal government for the next dose or additional doses will be based on how quickly the states are getting what they have out. I've been very disappointed and frustrated so far, but in the last several days, it does look like things have stepped up. I know that there are lots of reasons and lots of excuses as to why this has been slow. You know, I would just point out that when we first found out about this, when we started closing down the state in March, we were hearing, you know, we're going to have to do these things until we get a vaccine. So they've had months and months and months to plan this. Granted, they didn't know the exact number that they would be getting, and there's a reason for that. This has all been fast-tracked, but I've been very disappointed. I have relatives and friends in other states who are well on their way to getting their populations vaccinated. I've been very disappointed, but it seems like Mandy Cohen and Roy Cooper are getting this together and are getting us more on the fast track and where we should be.
Yeah, it's clearly a national problem. North Carolina actually isn't that different from a lot of other states and the challenges here. But I do think it's worth noting that over the last decade, North Carolina has actually had huge cuts to its public health infrastructure. You know, you can't just magically create it overnight. We've had consistent disinvestments in our public health infrastructure, which is in the lower 40s in the country in terms of how much we spend on public health. What a surprise that local county agencies are overwhelmed by the demand and don't have the facilities and don't have the trained staff on hand to handle an unprecedented event like this. It was something that called, I think, for vast increased investments in public health should have commenced immediately once we saw that this pandemic was underway. That's something that really hasn't happened yet in the state. I put the blame there on the General Assembly. It's been over the last decade that Republicans have disinvested in this area. So that's clearly been a contributing factor. It does seem that we're maybe, again, like we talked about some unity on the issue of domestic terrorism, maybe we're starting to come together here. Maybe we're actually going to work together, Republicans and Democrats. I'm hopeful. Everybody wants this to work. That's a really encouraging thing. I think it will happen, and I am relatively optimistic going forward after these initial hiccups.
Becky Gray is Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield is Director of NC Policy Watch. Enjoy your long weekends.
Happy King Day.
Thanks.
Each week, we review some of what happened in the wild world of North Carolina politics. And remember that you can catch a shortened version of this conversation on the radio, 4:50, Friday afternoons during All Things Considered on WUNC.org or 91.5 FM. And remember, on Tuesdays, we drop our long-form politics podcast episodes. I know you know that, though in the event you missed the pod from earlier this week, be sure to listen. It's all about the only successful insurrection in American history, which, spoiler, took place in Wilmington, North Carolina in 1898. As always, glad to have you along. Thank you for listening. Enjoy that holiday weekend. We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye.